I was driving to work, and there was an announcement of Roger Sugar closing and P&H Foods, which is a poultry plant, closing. 400 workers. What's the union going to do for these folks? Well, you have to do labor adjustment. So that was the beginning of the training center.
I don't think people knew the potential. We knew the potential. You know, it was innovative and it made the union look good. But I don't think they understood fully what was happening with the hearts and minds of the people that were in that building. Because that was, in my mind, without any doubt, the most powerful piece of it. The union was changing people's lives.
For a lot of those people, it was a first exposure, and it turned working members into union members.
To do a course in the 80s on Aboriginal awareness wasn't heard of. You just didn't do it. Now it's standard. And there's a combination of the labor studies, the academic side of the organization, with the basic union training. So now we've got a combination of both, and it works extremely well.
You are listening to Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, a podcast series created through a collaboration between UFCW Local 832 and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg, documenting a variety of events and issues within the union's history and what they mean for Local 832 today. This episode is entitled Organizing on Shifting Ground, the UFCW Training Center. Unions today face a number of challenges, not only the obvious challenge of hostile political parties, pundits, and a general public, but as well the changing demographics of Canada itself. While for many decades after World War II, union membership was predominantly white European, in the last 20 years, this has changed drastically. While the forces shaping these changes, the state and capitalism, are at times out of the union's control, the response to it is not. UFCW Local 832 in the 90s created a training center for its members. While at first not conceived of to address these problems, it quickly became a major way which UFCW Local 832 can engage and bring in this new workforce into the union. Former UFCW Local 832 president Bernard Kristoff explains how and why the training center was started.
Clifford Evans Training Center started in Guelph, Ontario, and I wanted to do the same thing. And then Cliff helped me with Safeway to negotiate cents per hour. And one day, I think Robert and I were driving, and we said, you know, we're looking for a building. And I said, let's go, let's do it. And as I said, the rest is history. And then the pension plan, who had an office on 1412, moved there. So we had a rental tenants. And then we started developing it. I got to tell you, the training center development, we owe a great deal of gratitude to Graham Dowdell. He was working for the Manitoba Federation of Labor. This is another guy I went to plug out. And I had my famous dinner at the Velvet Glove when I was hiring people, or at the Beaujolais and doing my stuff. And of course, what was attractive was the money I was paying the reps and the benefit they were receiving. And that gives you an edge, you know, to hire good people.
I felt it important because I always thought the union was more than negotiating a collective agreement and servicing them in the store. That outside their working place, there should be an opportunity for them to better themselves and for us to offer, you know, more benefits or training or knowledge or that kind of stuff.
Graham Dowdell, first director of the training center, gives his story on how the training center was started and the initial conception of it. Graham will point out not only the changing demographics in the workforce, but also how a plant closure was an entry point for education and skills training for UFCW Local 832 members.
So I guess it was in the spring of 96 that Bernard Kristoff was out at the CLC convention. And all these locals across the country were talking about their progress towards actually starting to build training centers. And Bernard was the head of the Canadian Council at that point. He got taken aback at how quickly some of the other unions were moving along. And he felt maybe even a bit embarrassed that they hadn't made better progress. So they had a national training director at that point, which was a good friend of mine, Janet Dassinger, and she did a presentation. And after the meeting, he said, I'm tired of just putting money into this trust fund every year and just handing out scholarships. I know scholarships are great, but he says, we got to get going on this. You got to help me find somebody. I want to hire somebody. I want to hire them now. And he said, but I haven't got a clue who would do this. And she says, well, Bernard, he's right under your nose. You've already met him. And she said, it's Graham Dowdell who's working with the MFL program. He says, yes, I just met him a few months ago. I gave him $10,000 to do a pilot project for us. And he said, it went very well. She says, well, hire him. He's good. He's a good labor guy. He's studying this stuff. So he went back to the hotel and he phoned me. He said, yes, Graham, this is Bernard Christoph. He spoke with this sort of latent French accent, right? And he said, yes, I would like you to come and work for me for as long as you live. I said, excuse me? He says, yes, I want you to come and work for me and help me build a training center for my members. Look, Bernard, I can't just walk out on the Fed. I mean, you know, they hired me and I said, tell you what. Let me give them a deadline of 6 months and let me try to wrap up the project there and help them hire the next person. And in the meantime, I will, you know, meet with your board of directors. We can pull together some plans. He wanted me to meet with their architects because they had already bought a building at 880 Portage. So he wanted me to meet with the architects and drop the plans and manage that construction, as well as start to do the steward training for them and start to build the programs and think about staff and whatnot. So I said, well, okay, I will continue to work full-time for the feds and I will work part-time for you. And so that's what I did. And we did get somebody in behind me at the Fed. And so January 97, I started work with UFCW, Director of Education and Training. 3 weeks after I started there, I was driving to work, and there was an announcement of Rogers Sugar closing and P&H Food, which is a poultry plant, closing. I think it was combined 400 workers from UFCW 832 being laid off. And so I remember I went to Bernard's office when I got there and I said, what's the union going to do for these folks? He says, well, I don't know what we can do. I said, well, you have to do labor adjustment. He says, well, what's labor adjustment? So I explained this to him, you know, that it's where we get money out of the government. We set up workshops on resume writing, job search, helping people identify what their skills are and what they'd like to get retrained for. A whole bunch of things we can do. He says, do you know about that? I said, yes, I've done it. I did it at the center in Toronto. And he says, okay, go, make it happen. So that was actually the beginning of the training center, was a labor adjustment program. And we hired a longtime shop steward from P&H Foods, Shirley Lambeau, to work with us because she had the trust of her members to do needs assessment interviews with people. We hired a secretary. We got money for somebody to do job search techniques workshops for people. Got a storefront place across the street from where the training center was getting renovated. And so that was really the first program. And it became the career development program, labor adjustment program at the training center, and moved into the center. And and a year later, hired Marguerite Roger to be the program coordinator and actually start to develop the programs, including the high school program, and got ESL programs running, literacy programs, set up 2 computer labs, and, you know, the whole training center kind of took off from there.
Marguerite Roger was the first program developer at the training center. Marguerite talks about her experience coming into the training center and the untapped potential that she saw in it.
At a certain point, Graham connected with me and said, come on, I want to take you, show you this thing I'm working on. And took me to the site of the UFCW training center on Portage Avenue, and it was completely under construction. There was wires everywhere and workmen and hard hats and... And he took me into this one particular corner of the building and he said, and this is where I think your office can be. And I thought, what the heck are you talking about? But he was trying to get me to come to work for UFCW. And it sounded fantastic. So philosophically, it felt such a good fit. And it was program development and it was languages. So that was perfect. I was there for about 5 years. It was absolutely incredible. It felt groundbreaking. I learned so much. We connected with labor folks nationally. Just it felt so good doing social justice work, doing education for the right reasons. Met a lot of people from across the country that were educators in a similar way. The things I still think about today that I learned there. I don't think people knew the potential. We knew the potential. Graham was really good at presenting what was going on. You know, it was innovative and it made the union look good, but I don't think they understood fully what was happening with the hearts and minds of the people that were in that building. Because that was, in my mind, without any doubt, the most powerful piece of it. And I think unless you were there working with the people day to day, it would be really hard to see and understand that. But actually the time that, when Rena was, she was the valedictorian, and she and her husband, it had been such an emotional thing that she was even alive, never mind that she graduated, and that we had made it possible for her to graduate despite this incredible illness, right? They couldn't believe that somebody would do this to make this happen, that they were that important to us. And the husband was standing behind his wife, tears rolling down his face as his wife did the valedictorian speech, and Bernie was there that day. And I think on that day he got that the union was changing people's lives. Maybe not their political beliefs, not their how they were going to vote or whether they were going to attend union meetings, but they felt the union cared, and so they became pro-union because they felt they were part of a family in a way that they didn't feel they were part of a family by going to a union meeting. Because so many times the meetings are co-opted by individual strong personalities or whatever. It's not for everybody, whereas school was for everybody. And school gave them something that they could take wherever they were going to go. Like UFCW was never going to be able to observe if they used what they learned. But because it was always connected back to UFCW, that was the best investment for those dollars, in my mind, ever.
This highlights how the training center was changing the hearts and minds of the members, and how union officials were starting to see this change firsthand. Building upon all of this, former UFCW Local A32 president Robert Ziegler explains how when coming into the position of president, he wanted to build more involvement and democracy within the union, and how the training center fit into that, and how demographics played into this decision.
The other aspect is I wanted to have more involvement of the staff, the executive board. I wanted to bring a little bit more democracy into the organization. It was previously a top-down organization. Wanted to look at expanding the education that we have. The training center had started earlier on, but wanted to have more steward courses. Wanted to expand the education. Wanted to expand the type of things that we did. And then also wanted the local to really reflect more of the membership, because at one time, like most organizations, we were a basically white European workforce and a white European union. So wanted to have more women on the staff, on the executive board, wanted to have more new Canadians involved in our local union, because saw some of the failures in other parts of Canada and the U.S. where unions didn't reflect their membership and didn't reflect their interests. So looking at that, wanted to make sure that we had everyone involved in the unions. When we first started off, we had a training center, and then eventually we started doing some basic courses, but we had the one center. What I wanted to see is we have members across the province of Manitoba. How do we take it outside just Winnipeg? So, over my career with the local, we opened a training center in Brandon. We opened a small training center in Neepawa. We opened, we had more and more classes around the province. We expanded the type of offerings that we did. And we had to also adjust, because originally, early on, computers were a very important part of our offering. Well, eventually, everyone had computers, so it wasn't as big of an area. We ended up adding English as an additional language, which originally was not an issue, but now it's probably one of the largest things that the training center does. And so you had to adapt and meet the needs of your members. And the great part about the training center was, I've always said that when you look at the a workforce, there's probably 25% of the people who believe in unions and will support them sort of no matter what. probably 25% of the workforce that don't think a union's necessary, and then there's that 50% in the middle who really, you've got to expose them and give them an opportunity. Well, a lot of people, unless they have a grievance or they have an issue, are never going to have much contact with the union. Well, the training center brought people to take a computer course, to take a camera course, to take a Pilates course or whatever, brought them into a training center and said, hey, this union does more than I thought. So for a lot of those people, it was the first exposure, and it turned working members into union members. It was nice, the credit we got. I mean, the province really looked at, you know, our success rates, our graduation rates. We developed programs in Manitoba that were adopted across Canada by other UFCW locals.
The second head of the training center, Heather Grandjury, talks about leaving her position at the Winnipeg Labour Council and applying for the job of director at the training center. Heather comes from a purely labour background, not an academic one. She explains how that has helped her in her position at the training center now and what that has meant for the training center.
So Graham approached me and said, you know what, I'm going to take a job at MGU and I'm going to leave as director of the training center. Would you consider the job? And I went back and I hemmed and hawed for weeks on this because, again, my comfort zone was the Labour Council. I'd been there for 18 years. But in 94, I was ready for a change. Things were, you know, looking good, but I was just tired of the same routine. So I said, I don't even have a resume ready, Graham. I've never gone through an interview. I've only done the election of the Labour Council. I can't do this. So I was building up my confidence again. And I thought, you know what? Even if I don't get the job, it's worthwhile to do the resume and go for the interview. So I did. And I was shaking like a leaf. I walked into this place and I met Graham and Marguerite and Robert, who was the president of the time. And I remember at the end of the interview, there was a number of questions, but Robert said to me, well, you know, Graham is leaving here with a bachelor of whatever he left with from university. Others on staff, you know, have university degrees and you don't. So what do you have that sort of warrants you being a director here of a training center? I said, well, I may not have the academic background that the others do, but I have a union background. And if this is a union training center, I can do this job. And by this point, I was shaking, going, oh my God, now I was too abrupt. I shouldn't have said that. Ultimately, the next day he called and offered me the position. So here's your office. Here's all my files. Here's your staff who were, I wouldn't say overly friendly. There was a core group that saw me as an outsider. And who the heck is she coming in here to tell us? And now she's my boss. So the first thing I did was introduce union training. I wanted the diploma program and the shop steward training. I wanted health and safety training. Those were our two main streams, and they didn't like that. So, and we had some discipline, and we had some, I had to deal with suspensions, and I had to, do the written reprimands. My background kept saying, just do this fairly. Give people an opportunity to get to know you, and did some, you know, future hiring, and Anne's came on, and Wanda came on, and Jen, and Catherine, and Shirley had been here since the day I was hired, and we finally had a nucleus of a team. The training center up to that point was there was the local, and there was the training center, and the two sides don't match. And I just said, look it, all of us are part of 832, and if you don't start to see the connection that the two of us have to be joined together, then we're going to have some problems. And Robert and Jeff were of the full mind that come together. So the two sides had to work. So they included me as a staff team. They included the rest of my staff in staff events. So we became one. And that just gave me an opportunity to grow. It was very different walking in here. As I say, I had to fill an academic seat here as director of the training center. I had a high school program being run by somebody who, again, believed that the academic side of the organization was the only thing that we should be doing. I had a program coordinator that focused on labor studies at the U of M, a few other courses at the University of Winnipeg, and that's it. And then I had a support staff and a financial person. So my image coming in here was similar to the training I had went through CUPE, and that was a six-level diploma program, ending with the Labor College of Canada. So in each of the levels, you went through various stages. So under level one, you learned how to be a new member. You learned how to do the grievance. You learned how to collect a bargain. You learned how to understand your coworker. You learned respect and dignity. You learned stress. You had to finish all of those courses to get your level one seal. And then there were six levels. So under level two, there was another five courses. Under level three, another five. So that's what I took through CUPE. So that's what I envisioned when I came here. When I came here, there was five steward courses, and there was no health and safety courses at all. So all I did was take our existing program and expand on it. And then through an advisory board that I set up with rank and file members, I would pull them in 3 times a year and say, what do you guys need? Where are you short? What's missing at the workplace? So I need to have English brought in. I need to have cultural comfort and dignity at work and Aboriginal awareness and all these other courses brought in. So then I started to partner with some people who did course development in the province. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I can do this. I could sit down and write a course. I've done a few for the Labor Council. I've done a couple for the CLC. But if I look at a core course, I know what I want to do here. So then I start to write them myself. So that's ultimately where I ended up. Still, I just finished writing a generation gap course because our members are so diverse in ages. I really move on the demand of what our members are saying, and I move on the what's happening around us. To do a course in the 80s on Aboriginal awareness wasn't heard of. You just didn't do it. Now it's standard. Most unions offer it. It's just you've got to understand that community in order to understand how they work in our workplaces. English was huge, so I started an English program. Our high school program was based on you finish high school and get your diploma here at the training center and you're going off to post-secondary education. That's not necessarily the case now. There's a whole number of different reasons. So I broke down that mentality that you could only take your grade 12 if you're going on to post-secondary. So that opened up a whole different group of members. Then we started to do career transition where, again, people were losing their jobs and we were doing their resumes and sending them out the door. And I'm going, hold it. Are we doing resumes to jobs that fit in our workplaces? So if the Fairmont is hiring, why are we not directing people to our own workplaces and going, if Fairmont's hiring 5 people, let's gear 5 of these laid off members there. So we started to tweak that whole program. And I think it was an eye-opener for the staff team to have the opportunity to do some of the work that they really wanted to do but were held back because Graham was in a different direction. Not to criticize any of the work that he did. He had the training center where it needed to be at that time. I just came in and took it to another level. And there's a combination of the labor studies, the academic side of the organization, with the basic union training. So now we've got a combination of both, and it works extremely well.
Ultimately, the training center highlights not only economic shifts, but also demographic and paradigm shifts in society that the union movement has to navigate. Robert Ziegler sums these changes up.
What I think the key to a union is going to be adaptability. You have to be able to help those workers who are out of work rather than saying, you're gone, I'm going to try and find another 1,100 members somewhere else. Whatever is changing, maybe the industries are going to be different. We have to be able to adapt and try and assist in that transition. Is there one simple answer as to what the future is going to hold? No. I look at the grocery industry. When I started, grocery dominated who we were. Now you're probably looking at about 7,000 to 15,000 members are from grocery. Retail packing and other jobs are changing. So you've got to be adaptable. There's different issues that are out there, and you've got to be ready. And I think that's part of the key. Doing more than just negotiating, doing more than just presenting grievances, but you've got to, a lot of education I think is going to be one of the keys to build back some of that belief that unions are necessary and worth supporting.
What this highlights is, on the one hand, capitalism changing the economic and social fabric of Canada, and on the other, how unions can navigate and adapt to these changing circumstances rather than using tactics and philosophies that worked several decades ago. In some ways, unions have started to address these changes and apply different tactics and thinking to organizing and actions. The bigger question is whether unions will use these new tactics as tools for adaptation or for social change. As the UFCW Training Center shows, there's great potential for unions to use things like education centers not only to help their members, but create stronger union members and thus a stronger union. Thank you. have been listening to the podcast series Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, documenting the rich history of United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832. The podcast series is produced through a partnership between United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. Music by Broke for Free, Christian Bjorklund, Gillicuddy, Jazz Har, and Project 5AM. Narration by Scott Price, with production assistance from Kent Davies. For more information about the Oral History Center, go to oralhistorycenter.ca. For more information about UFCW Local 832, go to ufcw832.com.